This is so good, I forgot.
You're recording.
All right, we're back in open session. On 2241, and Ms. Krieger, you are leading the discussion.
Yes, so we received a pretty complete report from Dr. Kissel's doctors, and based upon the reports that were provided, it appears that Dr. Kissel is able to safely and competently practice medicine, and unless anybody else has any differing opinions, I would make a motion to dismiss 2241. Second.
And a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes, and 2241 is dismissed. Next up is our section 5, number 1. A board may review, discuss, take action on requests regarding clarification of interpretation of ARS 322242B pertaining to certified veterinary technician applications. Requirements per ARS 41-1001.02. First one, Megan Collins. Ms. Krieger's lead, and Ms. Frost is recused.
Yes, so Nikki, being the CBT, is usually the one that helps us on these, but because she is recused, I reviewed the documents submitted by Ms. Collins. She is a UC Davis grad in animal science, great school, and you know, from everything that I saw, it looks pretty equivalent to me. I realize there's a few things that are slightly different, but to me, I thought it looked okay. And so I would make, Victoria, remind me, am I saying that they can sit for the exam or submit their application, or is it both?
Let's see, try to mimic what the agenda item is.
Okay.
It just says clarification.
So.
If they meet the certified veterinary technician application requirements.
I believe that Ms. Megan Collins meets the certified veterinary technician application requirements. Second.
Motion on 42nd. To say that she meets the requirements. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes. Let's do the other one. Ms. Frost is recused from first.
Okay.
Rebecca Kaysen.
She has a master's in animals.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I know where
did I put it. But. Is that the one in the supplement?
Yes. Okay. So yeah, she went to Southern Illinois and got both her bachelor's and her master's in animal science. She's educational-wise, she's in great shape, and again, I thought that everything looked just fine to me. So, unless anyone again has any objections, I would make a motion that Rebecca Kaysen meets the application requirements for the CBT.
Second.
The motion is for any second to approve that she meets the requirements. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes. And the next one up is Megan Matthews, and Ms. Frost is back joining us and the lead.
Yes. So for Megan Matthews, hers is a little bit challenging to work through. She does have her bachelor's in biology sciences. I'm guessing she had a minor, or I don't know, just like a dual major in physical education, because I think she could like give you a pretty great workout with her physical education education. She did utilize the program to prepare. Obviously, it was very abbreviated what the comparison was. I feel like we've seen a few of these before where the comparison kind of didn't really help them out. But, you know, she does have those core curriculum that I would think, you know, again, from what I've seen from previous comparisons would, you know, make her eligible to submit for obtaining her, pursuing her BCNE and hopefully state exam. So I would make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion for a second to approve. Any further discussion? I guess I would say, Ms. Frost, I'm a little disappointed. I thought you were going to be a little tougher on this one because I wanted to see the comparison like the other two did. The side by side.
That's true. I did mark that.
Yeah, so I did. I did kind of pick it apart, and maybe it's unfair because I've seen so many of these, and I seen the comparison. But I feel like the last one we had, the comparison was not really great. So I don't know. I can't figure out in the statute that it's on them to lay it all out, you know, just that it has to be equivalent education. So again, maybe I was wanting to ask the executive director or our attorney, you know, I believe the board is supposed to determine if it's equivalent, not necessarily the applicant. So that's why.
Well, but they could make it easier on us.
Well,
right? The other two made it easy.
You're right.
She didn't.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was pointing at.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I was not really, I kind of sighed when I went over this, so, yeah.
So.
Victoria, when they call in to request how to do this, do we give them guidance that they should do a comparison?
Yes.
So, I mean, I think that's probably the key.
She didn't comply with the guidance.
So she didn't. Did she not give anything at all?
Well, she just gave her transcript, but there's nothing that says, okay,
She did take, so the program that she picked, I know that their curriculum, just because I've seen a lot of these over the years, their curriculum, when they lay it out, it's so abbreviated and brief. It's not like some of the other programs where they're a lot more detailed. And it is an AVMA accredited program, but it's super duper, it's just a couple lines, really nothing interesting. So again, that's right. I know it's not pretty, and we've had at least one other one in very recent, I don't know if it was last year or before that, but it just wasn't really a great layout. You kind of have to navigate through the transcript.
And that is all that she gave us.
Yeah. So, I mean, all I'm saying is you're asking for us to do something. Why not make it easy for us to do it?
Well, isn't the last page, isn't that kind of what she did? Because on one side it shows Ashworth College curriculum, and it shows the four courses that they had, and then next to it says classes at Northern Arizona, which are the classes that she took, correct?
I just don't think it lays it out. Like the other two had Penn Foster, the core, what you have to do at Penn Foster versus what they did, and they kind of matched them up. Now they didn't exactly match, but some of them were pretty close, or real close. And this, I just, I mean, if the veterinarians and if Ms. Frost is confident that this meets it, I'm okay. I'll vote for it. But I just thought the onus ought to be on them that if they want something, try to make it easy on us. And if staff's giving them direction, follow the direction.
Usually people do.
So, well, the other two did, right? So.
Thank you.
All right, any other discussion? Sorry, I'm dragging this on. I'm trying to beat Victoria's 3 o'clock, which she forecast. All right, seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion passes. She is approved. Board review, discuss, take action on veterinarian application. Victoria Lowe, the Krieger's lead on that one.
It's the first presidential pardon I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I know, right? That was interesting.
But what I thought was, her application's from last year. Right? I mean, it's like last June.
Well, anyways, she had a 2005 arrest, and we won't discuss the details since it's, since she's received a presidential pardon, it's been expunged. Certainly she paid her dues to society as well. And I thought it was cool. She got not only the presidential pardon, but then she received a full scholarship for veterinary school. It sounds like she's really turned her life around. So she is a great example. I would recommend that we approve Ms. Victoria Lowe's application.
Second.
The motion on the floor and a second to approve the application.
Second.
Is there any discussion? I guess I would just bring up again, if this was received in June, how come we're just now?
Her application was not complete until recently.
Okay. So, do we know where she's at?
I do not know, but I could ask Nancy.
Well, I thought this may be who was working with Dr. Thrasher. But I haven't met who's working with him, so I don't know. But that's been happening for a while now. Aren't they already licensed and done?
I don't.
Or maybe it's not the same person. I don't know.
But
that name kind of sounds
familiar. My memory
familiar.
Is that this particular person was going to work in a rural area,
doing
large animal, but I don't know if it's someone who's already out there working with another veterinarian.
Somebody's working with him. I haven't met him yet, but somebody is, and I heard it was a female, and that name kind of sounded like what somebody told me. I don't know.
Do you want to pause on
so
this?
Maybe I'm narking on her. I don't know.
Unless she was only doing technician work or something, I guess.
Yeah, but come on. I don't know.
We have an application before us.
I just throwing that out there. Motion's on the floor to approve it. So, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. And we'll see what happens. Number three, board may review, discuss, take action on premise inspections. And Victoria's going to lead us on this one. We got the scaredy cat. Start it off.
Doc's conducting inspections today, so I'm going to report out for her. So she visited the scaredy cat hospital. It was a board order to go back. The first time there were concerns, or a lot of concerns about just medical records keeping was the biggest thing, where they're just no exam results, no TPR visit, nothing. So happily she reports that things were much better this time, and that nothing was exactly the same, and just inconsistency in TPR was the only thing that she found that was anything problematic. So she doesn't believe another visit is needed anytime soon. So we can leave that one as it is unless the board has questions or concerns about scaredy cat.
I don't. So we don't need to take any action, right?
Okay. And then IMBR 2080 Affordable Veterinary Services, Dale Town and Country with Dr. Carney as the responsible vet. That's one that I inspected. It's a basically a vaccine clinic. And we've seen Dr. Carney over the years. It was surprising because he had five people helping him, yet things were certainly not up to par on anything. So there's kind of concern across the board just about kind of maybe being lax and meeting the requirements. He did respond and say that, you know, we're going to fix all these things. He did not yet provide copies of medical records that should have been fixed now, so I'm waiting to see those. But I think that's one we need to just go back and check on. So if the board would like to direct us to revisit that premise, that would be helpful.
So directed. How about the other, isn't he?
I was going to say, do we know the status of those other three premises? Like when we last...
What are the other premises?
So there, it's all just his mobile unit he takes to feed stores.
Okay.
You know, they're like in Yuma.
A different feed store? Are they all kind of like, well, there's nothing like that out there. I mean, it's actually a pretty nice store, or it once was anyway.
It's, I didn't go in the store because it's actually like a door to the outside to the, where they put all the food and stuff. And it's a feed store, so okay. Nothing unusual. So there's nothing really wrong with that. It was, you know, it's in the winter, it's cool. And I looked and there's air conditioning in it, so
yeah.
Presumably it works in the summer to keep that temperature. So just, you know, kind of across the board, I think, you know, he's hopefully winding down his practice and we'll kind of keep an eye on that. The next one that Don had was R3648 Ahwatukee Animal Care Hospital, Jeffrey Jenkins, DVM. This is another one the board wanted her to go ahead and do. She did provide a very thorough memo, but the kind of the main thing to talk about is when she got there as the unannounced inspection, she found out that Dr. Jenkins had recently left, was no longer working there, and considered himself no longer the responsible vet. He has since that time provided notice that he's no longer the responsible veterinarian, and we're waiting for them to submit a new application. But as far as the inspection piece of it, again, the good news is there were just a couple repeat things. One of them was expired control, or actually just expired drugs. And Don has three listed, but there's really actually just one of them would fall under our parameters of what's expired, because the other ones were not a month out from being expired. And the other one was very minor. So we think things are on the upswing. The best that's there now is the one that's going to be the responsible vet. So we don't think that this one needs a board directed random, it should just go into the regular queue of randoms.
How long do they get to get a new premise holder? Like clearly they don't have
They really don't have any time. So we tell them technically you're operating without a license. And so we'll say, and I'm almost positive that a week, you know, earlier this week, no, it must have been last week, Don told them you've got a week to get this to us.
I mean, I kind of feel like if we don't have it in whatever time she told them, we need to send a letter or take action on it or do something, because right now I'm like, there's no one overseeing it.
Yeah, we typically count them. It's honestly, it's very common because people don't know. They're relying on the corporate office to do it. There's lots of this person's fault. So but we try to stay on top of it to make sure that they do it, of what that is.
But in the interim, if I understand correctly, they don't have a premise license.
That's correct. As of about 3 days ago, when I got the notice from Dr. Jenkins that he was no longer responsible vet, because they don't have to work there to be the responsible vet, so he's been the responsible vet
since
this time.
Right.
It's just been.
But how can they have a premise license if there's no current responsible vet?
They don't.
Well.
That's my concern.
You're only a responsible vet when we have an application or we have a license. You don't just get to say, I'm a responsible vet. So he's a responsible vet until he tells us otherwise.
And he's told us, has he not?
Just a few days ago. So even though he stopped working there in January, he didn't tell us that he was no longer a responsible vet until a few days ago. So the license didn't get canceled until a few days ago.
My concern is that the business would have known. The business would have known that Dr. Jenkins is no longer working there and he was the responsible.
They did know because they told her that. We can't force them to do that if he hasn't told us that he's not. They absolutely should have been working on it. They were told that in January when Don told them that. So yeah, they should have one by now. So that's why we're watching it for sure. But I'm just saying, it is a common thing where we have to hound people to do what they're supposed to do. It's not our job to do that, but we do it like we do all kinds of things. If they don't, then we'll for sure follow up with that.
Or a civil penalty.
Victoria, do we think that the owner has known since January?
Yes.
We do?
I think they did. How do you not know that you're...
When he's not there. Yeah.
He doesn't show up. You do. Now, we didn't know because he was still listed as the responsible
right.
vet. They knew he was not going to be there. So they should have been working on it. And if they submitted somebody and we said, well, we're showing Dr. Jenkins as the responsible vet, then we could have said, Dr. Jenkins, are you still the responsible vet? Take your name off. But that didn't happen.
Do we need to take some action, giving them a deadline?
Sounds like Dawn did. So we gave them a week or something.
We have. And I apologize. I just lost track of time when I heard Dawn on the phone telling them that. But I feel like it was late last week, maybe, when I heard her say that. So I'll follow up with her because I don't even know the amount of you. I don't think. I mean, it could have come today. I just don't know. But it wasn't here as of yesterday.
And if they haven't?
In the week, then what we would normally do is then it becomes me calling and saying, are you where you are, without a license kind of thing. And usually that's all it takes for somebody to do something. But on the inspection piece, much better than the previous time. So we'll leave that as that is. But yeah, for sure, I'm having difficulty getting an application from them, then we would bring it to the board's attention.
Okay. It sounds like we want to do more than just watch. So.
Well, we have to.
Let us know what you.
We have to wait. You know, we only have so much resources and time, and we have to pick our priorities of which battles we're going to fight sometimes. Yeah.
If you don't have it by the next agenda, shouldn't they be back on the agenda as an unlicensed practitioner?
Oh, if it goes that long, absolutely something else would be happening for sure.
Okay.
All right, next up, board may review discuss news article related to veterinarian shortages. And Ms. Solomon is lead.
Yes, and it will connect to some information later on in the agenda. The current veterinarian shortage, and Dr. Thompson is a lot closer to it than I can speak to it, but this is being experienced, the veterinarian shortage, not only by the public entities and the shelters, but throughout the state. And we do have the new college down at the U of A, but they're halfway through about. So they have about another year and a half to go before they actually graduate. And at least another year and a half to go. It's a 3-year program. But one of the things that has often been cited is the cost of tuition and the resulting student debt that they're forced to carry. And I just wanted to clarify that if you are an Arizona resident, your tuition at the U of A for a year is less than $45,000, and the program gets completed in 3 years. So it's around $150,000 total a little less for the 3 years, compared to a private institution, which is about $100,000+ more than that, just as a comparison. But right now, the U of A does not have any graduates. And there's, again, the shortage is not just, you know, in the public sector and the shelters, although that's where I'm sure it's very acutely felt. Love to hear from other veterinarians what they have heard about the practice and any problems they may have run into. There is, as the article notes, help on the way, and that will be, we will have more graduating DVMs in the state soon. The legislature has proposed a bill, 1271, which would, instead of having to, under the public service tuition policy, they had, the recipient had to make 120 payments, which is monthly payments, which is 10 years before they could receive any assistance in their tuition. SB, and if I'm getting offline and you want me to wait till we get to, go ahead, okay, to 1271, that doesn't have that stipulation. It simply, it lists the criteria that, you know, and states that they have to work with, commit to working within the state of Arizona for 4 years. They have, for two of those 4 years, they either have to work for a shelter, a public entity, or in a rural underserved area, and that up to the balance of their tuition or $100,000, whichever is less, is what the state can provide assistance. They've got a $5 million appropriation, and interestingly, it establishes a new advisory board under the Department of Agriculture to administer this. So that it's, this is again, I invite any comments from practicing DVAs, particularly Dr. Thompson, since you experience it firsthand.
Well, I think, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, it's not just a shelter issue, it's a statewide, it's a national issue, but there are definitely some states that are much more greatly impacted by the shortage of veterinarians than others. And so how do we one, get more people through the system, and two, how do we get them to stay with us, I guess, are the big questions. I don't know if anybody has actually seen, there's a website, it's called accessofvetcare.org. And it actually shows the states and breaks it down by the counties in which and assesses the amount of veterinary care. And so when we start looking at Arizona is in the red,
yeah.
To say the least. Which, you know, we all, even private practice is feeling that, right? And trying to hire, and it's broken down to from 0 to 100 in the ease of access to care. And Maricopa County is actually only at 48. So we kind of think of Maricopa County as like, well, gosh, we're Metro right. Phoenix area. We're going to have the veterinarians. Yavapai is actually the only one that's over 50.
Right.
Wow. So, I mean, we've got plenty of counties in our state that are in the same, you know, low double digits, 10, 11. So it's an issue for sure.
Any other comments on that?
It's an informational agenda item. The article was provided to me by the chair of the AHS Facilities Committee, which I also saw. So.
The only thing I would comment on the accessibility report is that it looks at total numbers, so it doesn't look at the breakdown of large animal, small animal, and it doesn't look at the breakdown of pets by certain areas of the country we know have more pets than others, and I think it does that on a state view, not a area view. So like some areas are going to have more rural, some are going to have, you know, so there's limitations to how you utilize it. And the only reason I say that is because I'm currently working right now on a project in the Rio Grande Valley, and they're showing green. They're 99 to 100 on that report, and yet they have zero veterinarians that can do spay neuter in the Rio Grande Valley. So I'm sitting there going, while the report is directionally good,
yeah.
It, in certain areas you do have to dive in because it might be swayed by the type of veterinarian.
Yeah. It's at the macro level and doesn't look at the micro of the specialty areas.
Yes. And, going back to the shortage of veterinarians, do I think Arizona has a shortage? Yes. I think we've been working on it for years, and I think people thought Midwestern was going to help, but when only 10% of the class, I think, stays, doesn't help very much. It's not a big provider of students every year because I don't think a lot of them stay in the state. So U of A probably has a better means of helping because it's probably more Arizona students that are going.
They get out faster and it's cheaper also.
Well, part of it is too, if it's rural.
Yeah.
If you're from a rural area.
Yeah.
And that's your hometown, then it's a whole lot easier to go back versus if you're going to go out in the boondocks,
New York
single,
City.
Broke, yeah. Right out of veterinary school.
Yeah.
And you're broke and lonely, you're not going to stay there very long, right? So.
Well, and it was interesting because A&M was doing a research thing on some of their veterinary deserts where they don't have veterinarians, and they said that they're really strategically pulling people for their classes based on where they need veterinarians. So they know that people that come from West Texas are probably going to go back to West Texas. That's where they've been brought up, that's where they live, that's where they want to be. But if you take in too many students from Dallas, those Dallas kids aren't going to West Texas. And so they're trying to really affect their shortages based on pulling in students from where the needs are, because those are the kids that are going to go after. So they may not in the future be the best candidate, but they may be the right selection for where the need is.
And just as a reminder, the tuition for the U of A, that's for Arizona residents, which I think there's a greater propensity for those residents to not only to remain in the state, but to be willing to practice in the rural areas.
All right, so we're done with that?
Yes.
Their requirement to get the tuition, that's based on today. What happens when I can't find a rural job, a shelter job?
It says, I'll read you the from the legislation. A person who obtains a doctor of veterinary medicine degree from a veterinary college after January the 1st of 2023 and who signs an agreement pursuant to subsection D of this section may apply to the department to participate in the program. To sign an agreement to both remain and work as a full-time veterinarian in the state for the following 4 years. Two, to work in one of the following practice areas for at least two of the 4 years. A, agricultural practice in an area designated by the United States Department of Agriculture as having a shortage, and B, a nonprofit or municipal shelter. So
if they can't find one, then they don't get the tuition.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually don't think it's going to help much. What's the 2 year? 2 years, if I've got to do this for this money, I'll do my two and I'll money.
Well, but it's actually 4 years. Two of those years need to be.
Yeah,
I know. I'm going to do my 2 years at the shelter, get my money, and then I'm going to go over to this private practice.
Well, and that's the same point as having a sign up bonus, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
So, I mean,
sure.
I think to your point, maybe it's not going to directly help the shelter or directly help that for a long term,
right.
Except that you're going to probably have a revolving door. But
right.
If they then go into private practice after that point, then 2 years, like 4 years gives somebody time to try to establish some roots in an area, right? So they may not leave Arizona, they might not benefit that shelter or rural area for the rest of their career, but at least then they would be staying in this area because it's not just those areas that are experiencing hardships, right?
We've taken a slightly different approach to it from the standpoint of like, how do you get veterinarians encouraged to work in shelters or low-income areas, nonprofit clinics, you know, that kind of thing, and have given scholarships based on the work that they've done in school on that topic. So if they can apply, if they do work in access to care or in a shelter or volunteer or whatever, and that's what gets them awarded the scholarship, but that means you're helped because it's basically a scholarship to cover their tuition, so similar thing, but you're only really giving it to people who have already shown an interest, not people that are just gonna do it for the 2 years and get out. You know, like you're trying to recruit a better group of people coming into that, And what I think is happening is that they can't compete. I don't think shelters can compete pay-wise. I'm looking at Thompson to see if she agrees, but she's shaking her head.
I agree.
I don't think they can compete. I mean, just recently, like when doing a job change, like $100,000 signing bonus from a corporate practice was not uncommon for me to be offered. And I don't know many shelters that can compete with that.
No, I mean, coming from the largest shelter in our area, I can say that we can't compete with that.
But if you can compete on things,
major policy discussion, which we don't do policy, that's important. We interpret laws for the policies other people set. All right.
One last comment. This bill is sponsored, introduced by Senator T.J. Joe. I'm done.
He's all right.